Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye, an interview with Bulldog Kevin Anderson of NBC Sports Chicago. I hope you enjoy this interview. But before we get into the interview, we at the Bullseye hope to be a shining light in this sea of Bulls misery over the next few weeks. We're going to talk about the current unfortunate state of the team, but we also want to try to bring some light. And what we're going to do is reminisce about the good old days. Next week, we're going to record an episode covering the dynasty years, and we're going to have some special guests in that show. Jack Silverstein, a big fixture in Bulls Twitter, Big Dave from Ball and Bulls Outsiders. Anyone who listens to the show should know Big Dave. C-Dub from Ball. All these guys are favorites of mine. And we're also bringing back the great Brian Cush. Some of you may remember he's a fellow Bulls historian and former host of Running with the Bulls. All these guys are going to be on this roundtable that we're going to have. It's going to be pretty exciting stuff. So that's probably going to record it next week sometime. We're going to specifically address the first, again, 3 years of the title. So if you have any questions, if you don't remember that era, feel free to send some questions either via Twitter, CRedFred, at CBEFred on Twitter, or shoot me over an email, ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com, and we're going to wax poetic for a while about a much happier time. But this weekend, I will also post an interview with the Athletic founder, John Greenberg, just a great guy, very interesting podcast that we recorded on how he started the Athletic and his thoughts on the beloved Bull. Also be releasing never heard before parody songs and recordings in February from an album I never released. I recorded primarily between 2009 and 2015, all on or about the beloved Bull and the team at that time. The first hit single that I'm going to release will be the epic song called Heinrich, and I'm sure you'll want to sing along with your children in the car when that posts in February, so look forward to that. I need to do some minor overdubs and additional recording of an alternative vocal track, but I'm sure you'll cherish this song once you hear it and several other ones that I have to release about the beloved Bull. So finally, the last thing I want to note is we're bringing back the intro for the Bullseye that I think we used in 2011 or 12. Some of you may remember it, but if you started subscribing to the show after 2013, this was an intro we cut after LeBron announced he wasn't coming to Chicago, that he was going to Miami, and we were faced with the prospect of the evil Heat Empire. So, I just hope you enjoy it. Just bring a little retro back of a brighter time, and I hope you enjoy the interview with the great Kevin Anderson, Bulldog Kevin Anderson, friend of the show, friend of years, friend of tears, great guy. He's a capologist. He's got insights galore. So enjoy it. Any other questions, shoot me over an email, chicagobulls@gmail.com. All the best to you. Have a great weekend.
I'm starting to believe that it's Miami. I'm thinking right now that it's Miami. I'm thinking right now that it's Miami.
It's not true. That's impossible.
Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
No! No!
In this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat.
Absolutely crazy. He can get a bump in here. Wayne James for the win. James over Pierce.
That was necessarily to steal.
I'm not afraid.
You will be.
It's still will be, damn it.
Nothing is real if you don't believe in who you are.
I must break you.
I see film out there.
Get the one in the middle.
Right. Get the one in the middle.
He is now the youngest MVP in NBA history. Ladies and gentlemen, Chicago's very own Derrick Rose.
Big, too strong, too fast, too good.
What are you doing, Derrick Rose? Can go upstairs.
Too big, too strong, too fast, too good.
Damn, man, what the hell are you doing? There is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow.
Hey, I didn't hear no bell.
It's still real to me, damn it.
Thank you, guys. You're awesome. Thank you so much for saying what needed to be said.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have the great Kevin Anderson on the line. Kevin's going to spend some time with us and discuss all things beloved Bull. Kevin, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well individually, but as a Bulls fan, not doing well, as I think most of all of us are kind of just beside ourselves on how this season has gone, and certainly how even the last month has gone.
It's really insane that we're at this point, and we were talking offline how, you know, I never envisioned it going this way. I didn't envision, you know, Denzel Valentine being out the whole year, all the injuries. But, you know, now that we've kind of have a lot of guys back, I certainly expected the team to be far more competitive. And it's just gone in the same direction, just, you know, an unmitigated disaster. What do you think the primary reasons are for the issues with this team right now? If you had to say, put your finger on one or two of them, what would they be?
Well, I mean, certainly you've got to address the injuries. I mean, that's certainly from, you know, most of the first 2 months of the season playing without Markkanen, Dunn being hurt, Portis being hurt, certainly for a big stretch. And we know Denzel is going to miss the entire year. Certainly when you have four rotation players, two starters and two heavy rotation players miss that much time, it's going to impact any team. And it certainly is going to impact a team that doesn't have much depth like this Bulls team doesn't. So I think that's issue number one, certainly the injuries. But number two, I mean, you really have to. It's certainly from before December 4th and December 3rd, really, and then after December 3rd in terms of the Hoiberg era and the Boylan era. I mean, you've got to look at those two eras distinctly. And I think you can point to Fred, certainly had his issues, and injuries a big part of it. It's objectively, Boylan has had a much healthier roster, but they're not any better. In fact, you can argue that despite having one more win in the same amount of games, that the Boylan Bulls have been worse and have played worse than the Hoiberg Bulls have, which is shocking to me.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Fred only had who I think is our best player, Lauri Markkanen, for one game. I mean, this is inexcusable that we're still trending basically in the same direction, despite the return of Dunn, despite the return of Markkanen. It's inexcusable. I do want to get into one of the more controversial topics in the Boylan era. And I know you were never a fan of Jabari Parker. I know a lot of my friends weren't, you know, but I think you would agree. It's almost inexcusable that the guy would sit for nine games when this team was struggling with second unit scoring. He obviously could have helped there. What do you think the reasoning was, the real reason for why he didn't play, number one, and do you agree it was a solid decision?
Well, so, you know, to get back to your first point, yeah, I was never a fan of the Jabari Parker signing. I thought, given the Bulls roster as it was, it never made sense to try and shoehorn him into a small forward position, one that he was never going to be successful at. So that you know, when it happened, it made no sense to me. And certainly because of the Portis injury, he was able to slide over to the four and get significant playing time, and Markkanen certainly as well, you know, to get as a big his natural position when Hoiberg was coach. But regarding Boylan, you're right. He should have, you know, you can fault Jabari all day for his defense, and certainly we know that is where he struggles mightily at. However, he does provide scoring, and he does provide scoring in a perfect role off the bench. And to me, with a second unit that was clearly struggling to put points on the board, he would have been a perfect fit to play at the four or even the five off the bench in those situations to really help that second unit. And so I disagree with Boylan's decision to not do that, and it's been clearly this roller coaster of he's inactive, he's active but then sitting, he's then not playing, he's out of the rotation, all right, now all of a sudden he's playing again, and then to certainly have the latest injury, which I hope is not going to extend past more than one game, is a little bit of a setback there. But to me, the reason is, if you read the writing on the wall, if you read between the lines of what Boylan had said about Jabari, how he needs to be ready, he has to treat himself like he needs to be ready to go at any time. I honestly think it was an issue with his conditioning, and I think it was an issue with his mentality on defense and his approach on defense. I think just those two things royally offended Jim Boylan, and I think Boylan just felt like Jabari was not ready to have the spirit that Boylan wanted him to have, and I think that was the main reason. I think from a basketball standpoint, there's value in playing Jabari, but I think Boylan felt like that he was not going to play out of principle. He was not going to play Jabari.
So Bobby Portis, since his return, I think has been for the vast majority of the games been awful. And, you know, he's a guy who's in his contract year. There's a lot of debate on how much he should be paid. Apparently, from what I've heard, he turned down, you know, close to $12 million a year. I wouldn't pay him anywhere near that. And I think he'd be insane to turn down a similar contract this year. But what's your opinion on him going forward? Is he part of the future, or do you think he's a guy that you probably got to look to either trade or let walk?
It's a really tough situation for Bobby. First of all, Bobby's not a very good defensive player, and everybody likes to harp on Jabari for his defensive, lack of defense. But Portis needs to get better defensively. In fact, most of this roster is bad defensively. But Bobby has certainly been hampered because of his injuries this year. And I could give him a little bit of a pass for having to deal with several injuries. But in regarding him in the future, the Bulls and the smart approach, what they're going to do is the same way they really approached LaVine, is that restricted free agency, you essentially let the other teams dictate what Bobby's market value is. And this is going to be a wild July because so many teams have cap space and so many players are going to be free agents, both in terms of the top tier and mid-tier and even average tier of the league. But I think for the Bulls, if another team comes in and is willing to offer Bobby a contract that gives him $13, $14, $15 million per year, I think you let him walk. If you can get Bobby on a team-friendly deal, which to me is 10 or less per season, I think there's value in bringing Bobby back. I think there's value in bringing him off the bench. I don't think Bobby's ceiling is ever going to be a starter on a playoff-caliber team, but he is a good rotation player, and there is value in what he can bring to the table. Certainly, his intensity is something that is lacking at certain times with the Bulls on the floor, and I think that can be a good thing. So I think at a team-friendly deal at $10 million per or less, I would bring him back.
Yeah, it's a really tough call with him because you touched on a point I've been making for a long time. I mean, he's older than Jabari Parker. He's going to be 24, and he's just not a good defensive player. And I don't think he has the physical attributes to be a great defensive player. And I almost think the Bulls are better off looking at that 4 or 5 position backup with a guy like Ed Davis, who I loved and was one of the best signings by the Nets. You know, pretty inexpensive contract, 2-year deal, instead of devoting major resources to signing Bobby Portis, who really brings you nothing defensively, although he's a good offensive player. But then, you know, even on the offensive end, I think he's been pretty inconsistent this year, 3-12. Yeah, he's been injured, no doubt. I'm sure that's had a lot to do with his disappointing performance, but he was terrible last night, and he's had a lot of games like that this year in the ones he's played. He's just really been, to me, one of the bigger disappointments on this team.
Yeah, and the thing is that, as we know, Lopez is unlikely to return to this team. He's an unrestricted free agent after this year. And so the Bulls are going to, after having a couple seasons of having too many players in the front court, they're going to lose Jabari, certainly. They're going to lose Lopez and possibly losing Portis. You're going to need someone else in here as a big. Portis, to me, might actually be a viable five as a backup five with the way the league is playing with a lot of teams going small.
Yep.
So that is certainly an option for him. And the Bulls are just going to have to really approach, you know, they're going to have a ton of cap space, but they're going to have to be really smart of how they approach free agency this year.
And you brought up a great point that it sounds like they can just go as long as possible with him as a restricted free agent and go after major free agents first and leave his decision later on. Is that correct?
That's entirely accurate because his cap hit for this summer is only $7.5 million, which in terms of what he's probably going to get, he's probably going to get more. So essentially what the Bulls do is they'll go into free agency with, you know, approximately probably $40 million in cap space. And that is already accounting for Portis's cap hit, about 7.5. So they can just hold that on the books. And if another team signs him to an offer sheet, then they can decide to match or just go, okay, we're not going to match and, you know, renounce your rights and you're gone. And then they get that money back. And so because Bobby's unlikely to sign for less than his cap hit, just keep him on the books and let the market dictate what he's going to do. And then you can just react accordingly.
So there's been a lot of Bulls fans clamoring for the Bulls to take on salary. I mean, there were a ton of horrific 4-year deal signed in 2016, even 5-year deals that year, that I hear a lot of fans clamoring for us to take on in exchange for a number one draft pick. I would counter, I think that would be a mistake if it's a pick in the 20 to 30s, you know, for a contending team, just because this draft is so top heavy. And more often than not, historically, players drafted between 20 and 30 don't become great players, don't become all-stars. They're just role players. And I think the Bulls would be better off kind of keeping that cap space open and signing vets that will significantly improve the team and thus help these young guys. If you just surround young guys with young guys, and the Bulls have the youngest roster now, I think, in the NBA, I think you're you know, setting yourself up for problems, exactly what you see this year. What say you? What's your opinion on bringing on salary in exchange for a late first-rounder or mid-first-rounder, or would you prefer the approach of keeping that space open and signing some higher-quality players?
Yeah, and the whole reason this topic has come up is because certainly Jabari Parker has got a pretty significant salary, $20 million. And so the Bulls have been adamant that they do not want to bring on a salary for 1 or 2 years beyond this current season. And most teams, in wanting Jabari Parker, would like Parker as the contract, not necessarily Parker as the player. I'm certain a team like Miami would love to unload one of their bad contracts off on the Bulls, like Tyler Johnson. And so it really comes down to, if it were a pick, I'm a little bit torn. I'd actually argue not to trade for a first-round pick, but I'd be aggressive in trying to get a player who is slightly overpaid, like Otto Porter. He's actually grossly overpaid, and correct that. But, you know, I would be fine with, you know, giving up a ton of that cap space to go after a guy like Porter if that meant getting, like, Felicio off your books as well. We don't know what the, you know, potential talks have been. We don't know if the Wizards even consider that. But, you know, there's guys like we saw, you know, on the bench last night, didn't play, but Kent Bazemore. Bazemore, I think, would be a pretty good fit on this Bulls team. He's a very good defensive player. And he certainly is at a position the Bulls have a need in, at small forward. So if it were just for a late first-round pick, that'd be tough. I'd probably pass. If we're talking in like a pick in the mid-20s, even though we know the Bulls have had success picking in that range, and Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson, given how many quality free agents there are going to be in that mid-tier this summer, I probably wouldn't do that deal. But it certainly is going to be a really tough decision, because you're going to essentially, come February 7th, the trade deadline, the next day hits, and they're very likely going to buy out Lopez and or Jabari Parker and let them go somewhere else. We know that Carmelo is certainly never going to play for this team right now, which is in itself a very weird situation.
Oh, absolutely. So out of the free agents that we all know, the big-name free agents, and I think you and I would probably concur that we're not going to get Durant. We're not going to get – the team is just too bad. And I think most –
No.
Klay Thompson.
No, you're not going to get Kawhi. You're not going to get even meeting with Klay. You're not going to get a meeting with Durant's people. Like, that's off the table. You're absolutely right. The top tier free agents, even though the Bulls will have a max slot available to sign one of those guys, I don't even – there's no – with the way the team is right now, why would anybody come here? Why would Durant come here? They want to go to somewhere they can win immediately. They don't want to go somewhere that's a 3- and 4-year rebuild. So, yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
So that leaves other free agents, what I call the second tier, you know, guys like Patrick Beverley, Terrence Ross, Wes Matthews, Taj Gibson. I sent you a whole list. Is there anybody on that list that I sent that are unrestricted free agents that you would like? And I think this is entirely possible. The Bulls, let's say, to keep that $40 million open, they could sign a Patrick Beverley, maybe even a Terrence Ross, who I would love, who's still young and very athletic, to play, you know, the 2/3, Tobias Harris, Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, Ricky Rubio. Is there anybody on that list I had sent that intrigues you, that you would say, hey, I'd love to see them sign 2 or 3 of these guys, and I think the team would immediately be better?
Yeah, so with apologies to my good friend Kendall Gill, who is absolutely on the bring Derrick Rose back to the Bulls bandwagon.
Yeah.
I mean, he's driving that bus. He really wants to see it. I don't think, for multiple reasons, that would be good. I think there's too much baggage there. I don't think it would be a good fit for this team to have Rose back. So, you know, sorry to Derek. He's having an amazing, he's probably having the second best season of his entire career this year. It's awesome to see what he's been doing on the court. But I don't think bringing Derek back would be a good decision from that point of view. But in terms of guys I would love to see them explore and possibly bring in, Mark Schanowski is in love with Tobias Harris as an option, and I tend to agree with him. I think Harris would be an absolutely great fit on this Bulls team. I think given the year he is having, Harris might be outpricing what the Bulls may want to give him. He's having a great year, and I think he's probably due for an $18 to $20 million a year contract coming up. I mean, I would not be surprised if Harris signs somewhere for really close to what Zach LaVine did, you know, 4 for 76, 4 for 80, 4 for 84, somewhere in that ballpark.
Yes.
Patrick Beverley would be amazing on this team, though the ironic thing is, isn't Beverley more like a veteran Chris Dunn?
I mean, Beverly's shooting 38% from three, which would immediately put him as one of the better 3-point shooters on his team. So that's one area where I think he's a great defender. The issue with me with him is, you know, he's 30 now, and those guys tend to decline pretty quickly. And so that's my biggest issue with Beverly. He's a little bit too old, but I just love everything about the guy. I would absolutely sign like a 2-year deal, $10 million a year.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't you kind of want a veteran guy, a guy who is like passionate and fiery and can really like lead this locker room?
Yeah, he's got fight and spirit.
he does. He's got the perfect Jim Boylan ingredients right there.
Exactly.
So like on the right deal, I don't know if I'd want Beverly on a 4-year deal, but on a 2, maybe a 3-year team option, I think Beverly would be a very good fit on this team. And a third guy that I actually think would be a pretty good fit, too, would be Terrence Ross.
Yes.
Again, plays a position that the Bulls, you know, really need a wing spot. He's a decent three-point shooter. He's not elite, but he's certainly a decent three-point shooter. He's a good scorer, and, you know, I think he could possibly, you know, fill a pretty good role on this team. So those are the three guys I'd take a close look at. Tobias Harris, Beverly, and Ross.
I love all three. The issue to me with Tobias Harris, I think he's averaging, last time I looked, 21 points a game. I would be shocked if he doesn't get more than $20 million a year. I think he's going to be – I think he could get up to anywhere from 22 to 25. That's how good he's been.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly – the way he's playing, it certainly is a possibility. But, you know, the thing that's so odd about this year's free agency, with so many players out there that – there are going to be some guys who are going to be overpaid very quickly, and there's some guys who are going to be grossly underpaid because the market has started to dry up for them. So you don't know where Harris is going to fall on that.
Absolutely agree 100%. But like you said, Terrence Ross, and Tobias Harris, to me, is kind of like he's a 3 who tends towards a 4. You know what I mean? Like those are the two positions he can play in the modern NBA, whereas Ross is more of a 2/3. And I think there's more of a need on this team with the 3/2, the guys that can kind of interchange between shooting guard and small forward, as opposed to we got Wendell Carter Jr. in Lowry for the next decade. You know, that to me is like set. We need more.
Yeah, you need the wing. The wing is a huge issue right now, and you need shooting, which I will argue certainly Harris is an elite 3-point shooter. I mean, the guy is hitting nearly 44%. Of his threes this year, hit 41% last year. And so, like, he has reinvented himself as an elite 3-point shooter, and it's worked. I mean, he's heading into a contract year, so he's doing something right.
What about Bogdanović? That name kind of caught my eye. You know, now, unfortunately, with the situation with Indiana, too, with the horrible injury.
You just feel so bad for them. I mean, even though they're in the division, it's like... God, you know, you hate to see a player having a great year like Oladipo was, and to have him get hurt like that. I mean, he's going to miss the All-Star game, which he would have played in, and, you know, the entire season, not just for the Pacers, too. It's very, very tough.
Yeah, it's horrible for the league to see any player that ill go down like that. You never want to see that happen, and Lord knows it's happened to the Bulls. And we've had to suffer with the consequences, but I don't care who it is. It's just terrible to see. But, you know, that might put them in a direction now where they, I think, maybe even go to try to tank and rebuild. It's not out of the question that they could do that. And he's a guy I think that could come and fit possibly at the three. Are you?
Yeah, Boyan is a real, again, he's an elite 3-point shooter. He's having a great season. So he'd be a guy I certainly would look at. And you know, you need wings. You need wings. But more importantly than just 3-point shooting, you need some perimeter defense too. And
no,
like maybe that's where Patrick Beverley comes in, and certainly you can mix and match. But you know, they've got, this roster has a lot of holes to fill, and certainly in depth. Like, it's not just about like hitting a home run and getting a starting three. It's about getting depth so that second unit can come in and not just go from down 5 to down 15 in the span of like 3 minutes.
Agreed. Chris Dunn, speaking of perimeter defense, you know, kind of lost in the disaster that the season has been. He is, to me, improved, and he's realizing career highs in assists per game, field goal percentage, 3-point percentage, free throw percentage. You know, there's also areas where he's so frustrating and disappointing, and he's had some awful games recently. I thought he played again pretty well last night. I thought he sat for far too long between the third and fourth period. Would you feel this guy could be your starting point guard still, with the knowledge that, you know, point guards usually take a little bit longer to develop, or do you feel like, hey, he's probably best suited as a backup, and we need to look at getting somebody to start?
See, like, I'm not sold on Chris Dunn yet. And we've had certainly a 22-game sample size this year for him, but almost all of it's been under Boylan. And my concern right now, not just with evaluating Chris Dunn, but my concern with trying to evaluate anybody on this roster effectively, is if a guy is struggling, and certainly we can talk about Laurie if you want to, and I think we're going to see a much better version of Laurie in the upcoming months, but regarding Dunn, has he been inconsistent this year because of the system he's playing in, or because his ceiling is just not quite what we are hoping it would be? And I don't know what the answer to that is. You know, I don't know if it's because of the system and we're just seeing a kind of scaled down version of Dunn who's not allowed to push it up to the floor. But certainly there are major concerns and major holes in Dunn's game that give me concern that he'll never be a what we would term a starting quality point guard on the playoff team. And that's really the goal, right? It's not just about, you know, can you see him as a starter next year? The goal is eventually, is he a starting caliber point guard? Not necessarily the 1A and 1B, the elite guys, but is he starting quality on a playoff caliber team? He needs to work on his perimeter shot, and that's a big part of his game that is missing. Even his mid-range game has been struggling this year. We know he's a very good defender, potentially an elite defender, which is always good to have. But his ball handling and his decision-making isn't elite. Like, there's a guy, like, give you an example, like Rubio, right? Like, we know Rubio is an elite passer and an elite ball handler. And certainly Dunn doesn't have that ability yet. And that, you know, is he going to develop that next couple of years? It's certainly possible. I'm not sold on Dunn. And one of the main things I'm going to be looking at as a Bulls fan the next 3 months is what we see from him and if we can truly count on him to be the guy. Now, he's going to be back next year, so it's not like they've got to make a decision like he's a free agent, and they'll have more time to really evaluate what they have for it. But as of right now, I don't think they can truly count on him to be your, quote, point guard of the future.
Yeah, it's such a difficult decision with him because I do see signs, and I think you would concur too, that, I mean, he is elite defensively, and I think his passing has improved this year. I really think he's been a better facilitator at the incredible game against Indiana. I think he's had a lot of good moments, but we just need more time with him, and you're absolutely touched on something that's right. This Boylan disaster is really, I'm concerned it's going to affect our evaluation of these players, and that's the last thing we need to do is make a mistake on Chris Dunn, considering what we gave up for him. Let's move to the draft. Four players. I think right now, I think most people would say it's probably about, the draft is probably about 4 to 6 deep. It's a very top-heavy draft, obviously with the big prize being Zion. Let's go over the three Duke players, Zion Reddish and R.J. Barrett, and the new Ja Morant, who is taking over, and I know our good friend Mark Shinowski is in love with him. You've seen all these four play. I'd love to hear your ranking of the four players, number one. And number two, who's the best fit for the beloved Bull?
Well, I mean, clearly Zion's number one, and anyone who's watched any college basketball this year who says otherwise, I'd have to strongly disagree with. I mean, Zion, not only in terms of his skill set, his athleticism, but his potential. I mean, he's got the potential to be a franchise player in the NBA. And, you know, certainly he's got, his game's not perfect. You'd like to see him improve his perimeter shot. But his skills that he possesses as at his height, which is 6'7", he's a great passer. He's a very good ball handler, and his athleticism is through the roof. So, I mean, Zion is clearly going to be number one, barring some catastrophic injury, which we all hope doesn't happen. He'll be the number one pick to whoever goes, regardless of what fit and what need. Zion goes number one, and he's really the top of the class right now. It's interesting because I went into this year thinking RJ Barrett, after, you know, reading a lot of stuff of him, and even watching the first couple games, I thought Barrett was going to be an elite player in the league. I've soured on Barrett a little bit. There are a lot of holes that, like, there's some red flags with him. His decision making in late games, certainly we saw it against that Gonzaga game a couple months ago, were really, like, it was just mind-boggling what he was doing out there. I mean, he basically played ISO ball, and nobody else touched it, trying to be the hero. So his approach, I think, is a little bit of a concern to me. And he's actually not a very good shooter and playmaker inside. He's certainly great on the outside, but his shot percentage inside is not very good. And so that concerns me a little bit. I think he's still got a great skill set, and I think Barrett, on the right team, who comes in, if Barrett goes into a situation in which he is the primary ball handler and the primary scorer, I think he will thrive. My biggest concern with Barrett right now is his game reminds me a little bit of a fellow Canadian who's not doing so well in Minnesota, and that's Andrew Wiggins, and who's a elite offensive player, but hasn't been able to do much, you know, doesn't make his teammates better, and it's just a scorer, and that's it. And quite honestly, you can also point to what we've seen from Zach LaVine a little bit too. You know, now if you're getting compared, if you're comparing Barrett to LaVine and Wiggins, there could be a lot of worse comparisons. But at the same time, I'm not convinced that Barrett is going to be a franchise player in the NBA, like a lot of certainly scouts or fans would hope he would be. I would still slot Barrett in at number two, though. I think he's still going to be the second pick in the draft, regardless of who picks there. And then after that, you know, Ja Morant's really interesting. Like, he is, and our good friend Ricky O'Donnell made this comparison for SB Nation on this latest piece. Is Ja Morant is like Russell Westbrook, and yeah. Ricky's right. Like, he plays like Russell. He's got the athleticism of Russell. He just is the guy who's going to put up triple doubles on a regular basis in today's NBA. Like, Morant has a lot of things to like about his game. And, you know, the more I watch of him, the more I think, gosh, I mean, he really could be an elite player at the NBA level. The question you have certainly about Morant is he plays at Murray State, and so the competition he's playing against is not that good. And it's not like Duke, and they're playing against top-tier caliber competition every night. Murray State clearly is playing against, you know, some of the lower tiers of Division One, and so you wonder, is he putting up big numbers, you know, because of who he's playing against? But at the same time, you can't deny what he's doing from athletic standpoint and what skill set he has. Morant's really impressive, so I would not be surprised if we get to next June and Morant ends up being the third pick. And regarding the fourth player you mentioned, Cam Reddish. He's a guy who has really struggled to find a fit and to find a role in that Duke offense. He's certainly been overshadowed by his two teammates. But Cam, to me, is really intriguing because he reminds me a little bit of a point forward. Like, not saying like Scottie Pippen type, but at the same time, he's a really good ball handler. Like, he's an underrated ball handler. Yeah. And he's an absolute elite three-point shooter. Now, his numbers don't give you that right now for how he's shooting at Duke, but at the same time, I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass because, you know, any freshman coming in, you got a lot to deal with in college, even if you're playing at Duke. And Like, his stroke is there, his form is there. Like, he's got the ability to be an absolute knockdown three-point shooter. And so anybody that can come in at, I believe he's 6'8", to come in and handle the ball like he can and knock it down from outside. And he's actually a very good defensive player, too. Like, Cam Reddish would not, like, in terms of a consolation prize, if you're the Bulls and you don't win the lottery and you fall to fourth or even fifth and Cam Reddish is there, I've got no problem taking him. I think he certainly could be a high-quality player in this league. I don't know if he's going to be a perennial all-star, but certainly he's got the skill set where he can surprise a lot of people. And then regarding best fit, you know, the Bulls, I quite honestly, other than center and power forward, any of the other three spots, they need help in, you know, because even if it's a backup two or a starting three or a starting slash backup one, you need somebody in there to really make an impact. And so they need depth. Any one of those guys are available. I don't think they can go into this June draft going, oh, we need a draft on need. You need to take the best player available.
I absolutely agree with you 100%. It's good we close with some bright spots, hopefully, in the near future. You're pretty confident the Bulls are going to be one of the bottom five teams?
Yeah, I don't see any way they're not in the bottom five. But with the new lottery reform, like, here's the thing. Like, everybody knows it's made a big deal out of the top three, the bottom three, if you will, teams have the exact same lottery odds, right? Which, yeah. which is accurate. You finish with 10 wins on the season or 18 wins, as long as you're in that bottom three, you've got the same exact lottery odds as those other two teams. But what not a lot of people, I think, realize is that the lottery selection is now the top four spots in the lottery. And yeah. So the top four positions are going to be decided by the ping pong balls. And so that means you could potentially fall from four to seven really easily in the draft if the lottery doesn't go your way. And so the Bulls having one of the worst four records in the league or one of the worst five records in the league, they could do that and still be picking seventh pretty easily because the odds are flattened out.
It's possible they could have the worst record and fall to five. Is that what you're saying?
100%. Exactly right.
I think that's probably a likely scenario based on the last year.
Like, I honestly think, as I joke about with the Bulls outsiders, with Matt, John, and David, that I think the lottery gods are going to punish the Bulls for the year they're having, right? This isn't like 1.7% and Derrick Rose is playing in his hometown. Like, I honestly think that they're not going to draft in the top four. It's just a gut feeling of mine. I hope I'm entirely wrong, but I just think that even if they finish like third in the lottery, if you will, that they're going to drop to five.
The basketball gods haven't exactly been kind to us. I know we won
the
lottery.
No, they're angry gods.
I know we won the lottery with Rose, but you know, that didn't exactly turn out, you know, according to plan with the injuries and you know, obviously with Noah. So it would be, I think, some time for a nice light to shine on us. But, Kevin, hey, man, I can't thank you enough for coming on Chicago Bullseye and giving us another over a half an hour again.
Anytime, Fred.
I'd love to – anything you want to talk about, to watch? I know the great Bulls Outsiders podcast. I've been loving that now.
This was kind of based on demand of several of our Twitter followers on NBCS Bulls. The Bulls Talk account, that they wanted to have the Outsiders show in podcast form. And so we did it. We delivered. So if you want to relive the Outsiders the night before, maybe you missed a little bit of it, or maybe you want to hear the show without having to watch Matt, John, and David on camera, which the guys joked about last night, go to NBCSportsChicago.com/podcast. It's also available on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify as well. So you can subscribe and listen to the show, and certainly for our Bulls content on NBCSportsChicago.com, we are starting to gear up towards draft coverage. Mark Schanowski is doing a weekly NBA draft big board where he's going to be ranking the top prospects, and no shock, he's got Zion number one there as well. So that'll be out every Friday. to look for that. And we've got some good stuff coming down the pipeline in the next couple months, too.
Yeah, and loving it. I'm actually working on an article for top five all-underrated Bulls. I know one of them's going to cause Matt Peck's head to explode, so I'm looking forward to that reaction.
Is Kirk Heinrich on that list?
He's definitely not on that list. The counter, he'll definitely, I'm sure, make a spot, but not on the underrated Bulls. So I'm looking for. I'll finish that up this weekend, and yeah, I mean, that's what the rest of the season's going to be, draft talk and reminiscing about, you know, the brighter days, because this is, with the present here and now, is a complete and utter disaster. But hey, man, you guys always are an oasis in this horrific, you know, wasteland of Bulls basketball this year. So thanks for all you do, Kev.
Thank you, Fred.
Have a good one, brother. Talk to you again soon, my man.
You got it, bud. Okay.